you want a vision of the future, Winston, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever.
They will run you dizzy. They will pile falsehood on top of falsehood until you can't tell a lie from the truth and you won't even want to. That's how the powerful keep their power. Don't you read the papers?
The world is a college of corporations, inexorably determined by the immutable bylaws of business. The world is a business, Mr. Beale. It has been since man crawled out of the slime.
Welcome back to another episode of Our Interesting Times. It is my pleasure to have Jay Dyer back on the show. Of course, Jay is the proprietor of Jay's Analysis, jaysanalysis.com. He's also the author of Esoteric Hollywood and Esoteric Hollywood 2. Jay, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Tim. Thank you.
Thanks for coming back on the show. Well, you just, you've started a new globalist series. I guess this time you're dealing with the issue of organized crime and its role in the power structure. You also did a talk on serial killers, how it overlaps into that, of course. We get into that. This kind of comes off a couple of years ago when you did the thing on the series on Carol Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope. Mm-hmm. And so I guess you're kind of doing the same thing here.
Yeah, I just noticed that, you know, I'd kind of overlooked the mafia angle in depth, and you know, the deeper that you get into a lot of these topics, you know, the rabbit hole usually goes a lot deeper than you originally thought. And whether it's contract killers and assassins and serial killers, or whether it's the various mafias or Hollywood or intelligence agencies, there's always a lot more overlap than you initially think. So it's a never ending series of rabbit holes that you can go down.
But you start, the rise of organized crime in America. Because most people think, the 1920s, or, with Al Capone and the 30s, and of course there's Al Capone, Lucky Luciano, Sam Giancana, but it's a bit more, complicated, because it organized crime developed along with certain events in the 20th century, like Prohibition, and simply you wouldn't have had organized crime, at least not the scale that existed, without something like Prohibition to let it develop. Amass enough wealth and attract the expertise and talent, if you will, to grow, become as influential as it is. But there's one thing I think we'll talk about as you investigate, look into it, just the confluence between the underworld and, say, the netherworld of intelligence and the upper world of high finance and big business.
Exactly.
And so that's what makes it so interesting. And I think you've said it is, it's almost like in order to study, understand politics, not to, you don't just have to have civics and political philosophy. You also have to study criminology.
Exactly.
So I'll let you take it from there.
Well, I think it's important to mention that the history of the Sicilian mafia, which is just where I chose to focus, due to all of the books that I happen to have, due to Ashman's book, due to Selwyn Robb's big book on the history of the five families, that in the context of Sicily, from which, we get the idea of the Sicilian mafia, originally mafiosi were sort of, you could say, libertarian local militia patriots. And maybe in the middle ages, that they're there to be the self-defense forces. And of course, over time, this evolves into kind of mercenaries, brigands, thieves, different private people that could be hired for jobs. And I think the most interesting connection in relation to all that that I found was that Garibaldi, the unifier of Italy, was a big fan of Giuseppe Mazzini. Now, I think they eventually had a falling out, but Mazzini, who was kind of the Albert Pike, I guess you could say, of Europe, really influenced Garibaldi. And so when Garibaldi recruited the Mafiosi to be his soldiers, I suspect that that's the origin of the Masonic elements. And so there's a group of Masonic-esque people in Italy called the Carbonari. I don't mean the police, but I mean the secret society, the Carbonari. And their rituals and rites, the Freemasonic influence in Garibaldi's soldiers via Mazzini, I think, is where we get this idea of the Omerta, right? So the Omerta, the oath, which has so many similarities to the Freemasonic initiation rituals, I think, I think this is where it comes from. A lot of speculation here, but like nobody doubts that Mazzini was a famous high-level Freemason. You know, he obviously influences Garibaldi. There's obvious Freemasonic influences in that whole unification of Italy and revolution. They were even at the time having problems with the papacy and locking. And I think that's the period when Pius IX gets locked into the Vatican for a while. But anyway, the families that do end up kind of emergent, or the tribal chieftains, I think, originally, that would become the Mafiosi, they were kind of protectors or local militia. And the church even allowed this for a time, because they would also, you know, keep brigands and thieves from breaking into the church. So there's different levels of influence here, of militia to thieves, to mercenaries, to patriot, to secret societies, right? So Mafiosi has different meanings in different centuries. But by the time we come to America in the 20th century, the Italian immigrants would really begin in New Orleans. And that's the first place they land. That's when Italian organized crime, Sicilian mafia, begins. And then, of course, eventually it expands to New York. Mm-hmm. But early on, I think around the turn of the century, it's actually New Orleans that's the beginning of the mafia, for the Sicilian mafia, that expands to New York. But it's still petty crime. It's still low-level stuff. There's the Mustache Pete's. There's these kind of just random street gangs. If you've watched, you know, the Godfather, you know, I think it's, what is it, part two, where it flashes back to Don, when he's young, as Robert De Niro, where he kills Don Cheech, the guy with the big mustache and the white suit. And this is, again, the phases of the stages prior to the mafia proper, which doesn't come to be until Lucky Luciano, Tommy Lucchese, right? Some of these different characters really get together at the consultation of Meyer Lansky, ironically, and organize, right, on a national scale. And that will become the five families, or what's called the commission. And ironically, again, this is suspected to exist for many, many years, but tends to be ignored, right? A lot of the feds, a lot of the government strata people don't really have a big problem with this. And, you know, we know with Tammany Hall, with O'Dwyer, these kinds of people, Boss Tweed, for many years, everybody just knew they were corrupt, right? They were bought off. But it's not really until the 30s, 40s, and 50s that the mafia proper, right, becomes becomes a national, and is in fact connected internationally to other countries. And by the 40s and 50s becomes the primary importer of heroin. 90% of all heroin by the 40s and 50s is brought in by the Sicilian mafia. And I think just the amazing part is the organization, the high level of organization, which, you know, even Hoover, right, was famously saying there's no such thing as Cosa Nostra, as it was an international national giant organized thing, probably because he was compromised, right? This is another window into the art of compromise. Hoover, I think, was compromised. I watched a documentary that was really interesting about how he was most likely, right, because of his proclivities, prevented from, you know, really doing much until RFK kind of, you know, forced him to go after the mafia. But anyway, so I'm rambling, but that's kind of the origins is Italian patriotism that eventually morphs into a kind of Masonic secret society for criminals. And my understanding, at least, and I don't know how accurate everybody's analysis is, this, you know, this could be too mainstream of analysis, but Sal and Rob argues that I think by the 50s or 60s, Carlo Gambino was the most wealthy, powerful man in New York, which I think is saying quite a bit, right? That would be pretty, that's pretty powerful, I would guess.
Yeah, and it's interesting that because this, the origins would of organized crime in the United States, we trace back to these waves of immigration that occurred in the latter half of the 19th century. Exactly. You had the Jewish immigration out of the Pale of the Settlement in the 1880s and 90s. From that, we get Mario Lansky, you know, Mo Dalitz, these people. Then, of course, you have the diaspora of the Italians in the latter half of the 19th century. And, of course, the middle of the 19th century, you have the Irish diaspora. It seems that the Germans and maybe the Slavics, the Poles didn't do much, didn't get as involved in it as the Irish, the Jews and the Italians or the Sicilians. So there's an ethnic element to this. And of course they organize on that principle, which is an interesting part because that's something unique to that time in America when ethnicity was so important.
And yet there was concord amongst the criminal syndicates, which is very interesting.
Yeah, that's how they organize. They set up like certain areas like Hot Springs, you know, where you can meet. Yeah.
Well, and at the time, for example, Murder Inc. Was an entire organization that was largely Jewish mafia and, you know, other mafias as well, working at the behest of the Sicilian mafia. Mm-hmm. So it kind of begins with the figure of Dutch Schultz, who's a Jewish guy who claims to convert to Catholicism. I don't know how sincere that conversion was, but you know, if you watch the movie Cotton Club, he's the psycho guy in that because he's one of the key guys in Murder Inc. And then it passes into being a full on guild of assassins under Albert Anastasia. So, but with Murder Inc., according to a couple different authors, they claim that it was really, you could hire them to do whatever you wanted. And the way it was structured, that the people doing the assassinations weren't actually told who they were doing it for. So that's what made, and that's kind of the compartmentalization structure of the whole mob system, is what insulates the bosses, the dons, from really getting caught. And in a way is kind of an ingenious, you know, structure to the system. So that's at least partly how it was able to go on for so long and attain such a high degree of power without the feds really doing a whole lot, because even up until the time of Hoover, his competitor, Anslinger, in the Bureau of Narcotics, had already caught all these different crime syndicates working together to import the heroin. And he would argue that, look, I've got the evidence, I can prove it's that all these criminal syndicates are working together to bring the heroin in. At the same time as Hoover saying, no, it's not true. There's no such thing as organized crime. It's just disorganized crime. So
yeah, and there is always Doug Valentine writes about that in the Bureau of Narcotic Agents. They'd be running their operations on the street level, and you know, they arrest people, do their investigations, and it'd proceed, and they'd hit a ceiling because when you get to a certain level, you immediately run into an intelligence operation.
Oh, interesting.
And you're told to back off.
Exactly. And
that gets into why, you know, these figures like Lansky, Mo Dalitz, Luciano, how Sam Giancana, how they were involved in the political world.
Absolutely.
Because
originally consulting with the U.S. military and Navy.
Yeah, you have Operation Underworld, which is kind of known, well known now. It's kind of like, but no one seems to, you know, what does something like this really imply about the nature of organized crime? And,
exactly.
You know, and the drug war, and you know how the world is really run. You know, people just think, oh, that was just a, happened in World War II and just after in the Cold War.
Right.
But that's interesting because something like Operation Underworld, and of course the early days, you know, the operations in Sicily during World War II, and then in Italy right after the war, how the mob was sort of instrumentalized, you know, by the U.S. government to keep the communists out,
Correct, yeah.
and the Vatican too. This is the corruption of the Vatican in this thing.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm probably there's probably a lot more to that than we even know, or I'm sure people out there know a lot more about that than me. But you know, just I noticed it was what Lucky, Don Vito, Genovese, at least in the earlier phases, right? Those people were already consulting. There's somebody else that consulted too that I'm leaving out during that kind of older phase. I don't remember which, may have been Bonanno or somebody like that. But yeah, there was a lot more of that kind of consultation going on, and you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours, even to the extent that I think it was Don Vito Genovese who played both sides like he was on the ins and outs with Mussolini back and forth. Like he was originally pro Mussolini, and then he just switched sides, and he would sell drugs to the U.S. soldiers and help them out, give them intelligence too. So,
That's like Santo Traficante in Castro. He was
yeah, exactly.
playing both sides there, or maybe three
Yes, he
sides.
did. You're right. You're right. Let's see. I was looking at my notes here on
One thing earlier
Vito, yeah.
cases is with Luciano, where this up and coming politician, Thomas Dewey, I think is the Attorney General of New York, soon to be
Right.
governor, kind of goes after him. And this is how the politicians try to, you know, posture and go after a high profile arrest. Hoover was good at that. Hoover always wanted to go after like bank robbers because it was like that's what got people's attention. It was the press. So he ignored the mundane organized crime aspect of it for reasons that you alluded to. But the Luci where Thomas Dewey targets Luciano and gets a conviction, I think on human trafficking, right? Sex trafficking. That's what he,
Oh yeah, you're correct. It was the prostitution rings. And by the way, I remembered it was Carlo. Carlo also consulted. So it was. Let me see. This note says the International Longshoremen Association was directly tied to the mob. Lucky was still in charge, and there was a direct consultation between Lucky, Meyer, the OSS. And Hogan, I forget who Hogan was, but that's all under my notes under Carlo. So perhaps Carlo Gambino also consulted the Navy. So, and they would just say that they were patriots, right? Like, I think is it Lucky that gets deported back to Italy, and he's received with like patriot. He's a hero,
Yeah,
right?
he's doing time, and
Yeah,
so I
right.
think there's the War Department gets in touch with Thomas Dewey, who work out who grant him, I guess they release him from part of this operation. So Thomas Dewey, then who's supposedly going after Luciano, agrees to release him from prison and part of this operation.
That's right.
But this, I
Yeah.
guess, I guess you can do this for your country, that sort of speech. So, okay, we'll let him go. But then he goes over there, and in return for his, I mean, this, from my understanding, is a return for his efforts in helping the U.S., win the war against the evil Axis powers. He's
Right.
given the franchise for the heroin. This is the French Connection, right?
Oh, that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And so
So
then,
he, right.
I mean, but at each gate, he's empowered by the government. This these net these what it is this
Well,
gives
he
you
was
an
called a
idea.
war hero. Like they quote called him
Yeah.
war hero.
And these drug networks that are established are done are for national security geopolitical reasons. This is even true in Asia because as early I think the Flying Tigers, Claire Chennault, this illegal operation FDR had during the war against Japan. This is before we were at war with Japan, was funded by the opium trade.
Exactly.
You know.
Yes, this is how they get. Yeah, that was previously right. French OSS pipelines that then now, I guess Lucky gets. He's lucky, isn't he? He gets to take over this. So my note says that. So it was the unions and the dock harbor workers that the Navy originally reached out to Lucky for, because they controlled right the unions or the dock workers and the logistics and all that, so they knew what was coming in and coming out of the harbors, and they could also give the Navy right insight about what Mussolini was up to in Italy. So Lucky became worried about Mussolini finding out about his aiding of U.S. naval intelligence. And then Dewey banishes Lucky, but his aid to the U.S. Navy is mentioned, and Lucky goes into exile as a hero back to his village, and even the U.S. calls him a war hero. So Vito Genovese also made money on both sides of the war. Originally he was quite a fascist, it says, and then he had an anti-fascist killed because and then he suddenly has a conversion experience. Oh, what do you know, he leaves fascism and now he's on the side of the U.S. military and advises them. Don Vito Genovese then goes to work with U.S. military.
I mean, making money from both sides, not something that just organized crime did. I mean, Standard Oil did the same thing.
The bankers.
I mean, exactly. Carol Quigley talks about that.
Well, you can do it if you're at that level, but if you're a lower level, it's, you know.
Well, which is funny because we see one thing is what you see the overlap of organized crime just with the overt political world, and more people were aware of it, maybe they'd be more skeptical of our politicians. But people like John McCain, Nancy Pelosi, her father was attached to the hip with the mob in Baltimore.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I think that was part of the Lucchese crime family, I think. Mm. But John McCain married into the Hemsley family. He was a lieutenant for the for the Seagrams. That's the Brofman crime family, Canadian Jewish mob family.
And, I didn't know that about John McCain. No.
Yeah, so his political war chest was funded by mob money. His second wife.
Well, that's not anything new. We've heard of this one before with the Kennedys, right?
And so this is why, one of the reasons why I became such an arch Zionist is because he's.
I see. Okay. Yeah, I didn't know that.
And Pelosi's father was Congressman, Mayor of Baltimore, who was known to be good pals with various mobsters. And of course, another port city, what's coming in, But people don't make the connection between, these political dynasties like the Pelosi family and her vast fortune and what her father did, who was
Wasn't that true of Hillary, too, out of Chicago, the Chicago mafia?
I'm not quite sure about Hillary's family.
I've heard that one of Hillary, maybe her dad or one of, I forget who, but there is some connection there as well.
And so, of course, the Bushes and their connection to Peter Bruton's book about the Sabian loan scandals, and how the mob and CIA pretty much a lot of those Sabian loans were just robbed by the CIA to fund black operations along with the mob.
Yes, you have mentioned this, and this is one I still don't know a whole lot about. So. Is there a book you recommend on that?
Yeah, it's Peter Bruton's book. Scandal. One of these books. It's a great book, but no one ever talked about it. It was ignored, sort of shadow banned in the day back in the 80s because it came out just at the Bush's reelection campaign. I think it was 91. Yeah, 91. I think Houston Chronicle or something was a reporter, and he just talks about the whole savings and loan scandal. It's called. Bush, the Mafia, and the CIA.
That's on my list to get.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And there's still, you could probably still watch on YouTube. There is like a public access channel. It was one of these low quality, but it was really interesting, where he gives a series of three or four really detailed interviews about the book that you can watch on YouTube.
Okay.
But I mean, it just shows that, so again, these political dynasties, families, of course, we know about the Kennedys, and Joe Kennedy, and their connections to organized crime, and how it aided in their political rise, but then also it contributed to, of course, perhaps to the death at least of two of the brothers. The one being the president, one being the attorney general.
Exactly.
Former attorney general, then senator. He was killed in 68. But
yeah, I was really surprised at how kind of transparent all the information about Carlos Marcello was. I mean, that to me is like pretty obvious that he has some role in the death of JFK. I don't even know how anybody couldn't get that. I mean, even the mainstream kind of A&E channel documentaries on Carlos Marcello make it pretty transparent that, he's clearly one of the key figures that that you know is involved in this assassination of JFK and probably RFK too.
Mm-hmm. And of course, that whole era, you have what's going on in Cuba. Of course, that involves New Orleans because they're very interested in what's going on in Latin America. Operation Mongoose, this sort of umbrella mm-hmm. operation to get rid of Castro. What Castro is, I think, is debatable.
Up for debate, yeah.
You know, actor, baseball player, would-be baseball player turned dictator, you know, boogeyman for decades. Where the CIA, again, got in the bed with the mob, wouldn't be the first time, to help deal with Fidel Castro, take him out, you know. And that involves, was it Gianni Roselli? Carlos Marcello.
Yes.
Sandro Trafficante.
Rosselli,
yeah.
And Trafficante. And Robert Mayhew paying $150,000 to Trafficante.
Mm-hmm.
Which the inquiry questions right, people about, but they never find out where this money went. So nobody ever knows where that money went. And perhaps it went instead to the JFK. Castro didn't get killed, but somebody else did.
Yeah.
Maybe that's... Yeah.
Well, they would hire what they call mechanics. You know, these are these guys, and some people have theorized they were assassins coming out of France. I mean, this would tie back to the Luciano network and that operation. Or some people have said, you know, that it was, there's also an Israeli angle to that, because JFK was putting resistance to the Israeli development of nuclear program. End of the day, there's
Who's the guy from American Free Press? I read his book on that.
Oh yeah,
years ago.
Yeah, but that's because the network, the Permadex, which employed Clay Shaw, was owned by Tibor Rosenbaum, who owned the Swiss bank that was funding this operation. There was a vast criminal network of illegal arms shipments, you know, Jewish operation mm-hmm. from the late 40s on to the early 60s. And this involved a lot of people like Meyer Lansky and mm-hmm. Mo Dalitz. And again, they were doing their thing. And it just gives an example. It goes to show how these criminal operations supersede or entangled with the government.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So it looks like, for example, in the case of JFK, right, that the we know that they had relied on Joe Sr. had relied on mob friends to stuff the ballot box to do some of the big city election machine stuff that we happen to have seen recently, right?
No evidence of no evidence of fraud.
Well, if they say so, I guess so. So I think we've seen maybe a repeat of that kind of a thing but that's how JFK, right, comes into office. Mm-hmm. I think that's pretty well known nowadays. And then, the Kennedys seem to maybe not be keeping up their end of the bargain. At least that's, one of the prevalent theories here is that they don't scratch the back of the people that helped them get elected, and they, sort of shine the media spotlight on these mobsters, and this is bad for black market business.
Yeah, there's an interesting thing there going on there, because in the 50s, Robert Kennedy is going after Hoffa.
Correct.
Which turns Hoffa,
because he's being used by them all too.
Yeah, and Hoffa then becomes a Nixon supporter. Surprise, surprise. also he's RFK is also linked to McCarthy, who some people think his handler was Roy Cohn, who got him going after Reds or commies mm-hmm. instead of the what was really going on. So. The whole Cold War.
Well, that's what they barked those orders at to Hoover too.
Mm-hmm.
RFK says JFK tells to Hoover, now you're going to go after the mobsters like you did the commies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when he switches his tune to admit that there is Cosa Nostra. And, it's not too long after that, JFK is gone.
Yes. And the idea is that in order to, the primary target might have been RFK, But in order,
Yeah.
you don't can't go after
No,
RFK. You still have to deal
Marcello.
with.
It's either Marcello or one of the other, or the boss of somebody is on tape in Hoover's tape saying, to get RFK, you got to get JFK
Yeah,
first.
because you can't kill the younger brother and leave the president installed.
Exactly.
So, but yeah, that's interesting. But the so you have that angle, and again, the whole I don't know where I was going with that. I guess
And
it's
then they all
good.
toast after he's gone. Like
Yes.
Santos Trafficante has a famous toast, dinner toast, that they're relieved that he's gone.
But didn't RFK have like Carlos Machela deported or something?
He did. That was another wild story that they always had this, seemingly had this problem of not being able to get the bosses on anything substantial, right? Which is, I guess we'll get them on tax evasion.
Yeah.
But they could never nail him on something hard, and so in the case of Marcello, he was an illegal immigrant. So they just waited until he had to report to his parole or a immigration officer or something like that, and they just kidnapped him. So he had him kidnapped and had him dropped off in Guam or Guatemala or somewhere
Guatemala, yeah.
because his fake passport or his fake whatever said that that's where he's from. So they dropped him off, and he somehow wandered his way all the way back to New Orleans, and as you can imagine, he was quite angry about this. So there's a definite motive on the part of Carlos Marcello
Yeah,
there.
because Bobby could be kind of dirty sometimes. I mean, he'd break the rules too.
Yeah, exactly.
But there was an interesting story because with the Kennedys, this goes to the fact that they were kind of cultural Catholics. But
Right.
they're the ones that kicked the mob out of Newport, Kentucky, and which sent them out to Las Vegas. Moe Dalitz and Meyer Lansky out to Las Vegas.
Oh, I
And
didn't know that.
yeah, there's an interesting story where the sheriff in Newport was cleaning up, and they slipped him a Mickey and put him in bed with a prostitute. And the wife was so suspicious of it, she took him to the hospital and found she had enough, drugs in him to kill an elephant. And
Well then, okay.
then
Yeah.
it came out, and he got reelected. They actually elected they actually this they elected a Catholic sheriff, and they chased him out of Newport. And that's when the Jewish Navy went out to Las Vegas and built Las Vegas. But
Well,
it's
that
interesting because
explains.
The
Go ahead.
Kennedy thing is, a lot of people understand why the Kennedys' war against the mob, at least a faction of the mob, can be traced back to the fact that Joe Kennedy had a stroke, and he was debilitated. And he if they this is speculation that if Joe Kennedy had been sound in mind, that never would have happened because he would have known the limitations.
Oh, interesting.
Whereas John and Robert, being the sons, the scions, were could have the luxury of being idealistic. Selectively, of course, they're politicians, they're men of power, but there is something there. And Bobby Kennedy was could be idealistic about these things, and he took his job too seriously, and he paid the price for it. So did
Well,
John.
that would explain the connection to Kentucky, because I remember many years ago I'd read a book that talked about the mob in Kentucky, but I couldn't remember what that connection was, but that makes sense.
Yeah, because for years, if you wanted to go, whore around or get buy pornography or gamble, Cincinnati was a conservative Catholic town. You had to go to Kentucky for that stuff. And that's
Wow.
to this day, it's still kind of a joke. If you're in Cincinnati, you go to Kentucky for that thing. You don't do that here. So,
Wow.
yeah, and that's where what's his name, Hustler magazine publisher came from.
Oh, Larry.
Larry Flint comes from Newport, Kentucky, I think, or
Oh,
that
I didn't know
area.
that. Well, now here's a question that I'm still not exactly clear on that you might know. Now, if the Rockefellers seem to have been, quite corrupt in Arkansas as well, what would have prompted them to make such moves against, like Winthrop and people, against the mafia in Hot Springs? I've never figured that one out. Now, some people have said, well, it has to do with the patents that they had on oil. And so the mob running all this alcohol, it was actually beneficial to the Rockefellers to not or to control alcohol, because they wanted to have, right, and you could only have engines that ran on oil, basically. Does that make
Oh
sense?
yeah, why would they
That's what I've
back?
heard.
Why
I
are
don't
they
know what's
back?
true.
Why did Rockefeller back the Temperance League and Prohibition?
Yeah, and why did they go after the mob
Well,
in Hot Springs?
the well, or I've heard it's been surmised or theorized that the Rockefeller supported that because it Prohibition made ethyl fuel
Yeah, that's what I was trying to
non-competitive.
say.
Yeah, there was a they passed a law saying that, that in order to sell alpha fuel, you'd have to use a petroleum-based additive, which poisoned it.
Okay.
And so at that point, it's about 50-50. Cars could be run on you know, ethyl alcohol or gasoline. But the idea, original idea behind like the Ford's car was every farmer could refine his own fuel for his vehicle. And you,
yes, that's and, it. Yeah.
But this all goes back to their obsession with controlling markets and monopolizing, and whereas petroleum you can control, and that's what Standard Oil effectively did, where they were able to control the refining of it, which is key. And that leads
so you, so you need to have alcohol. You need to have prohibition to do that.
Yeah, you need a prohibition. So then they back the Temperance League, and they start funding all these goofy progressive. You know, these goofy progressive ideas,
right?
You know, and so it's just them, you know, using that as a pretext to get rid of a competitive fuel.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense.
And so it, what that is how, you know, the Rockefellers would operate, you know, why they'd fund something like that, even though I think Rockefeller himself was a teetotaler, but he wasn't, you know,
right. Yeah. And Winthrop framed it like it was a moral crusade.
Yes,
because he was governor of Arkansas.
Yeah, some say he's the Bill Clinton's real father.
Oh wow, yeah, yeah, yeah. I've heard that.
Because
yeah.
Bill Clinton's mother was so, but that would explain, because that would like lead to the bloodline theory, right, of all these politicians.
Well, you know, the bloodline.
But he was from Hot Springs, Bill Clinton.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Yeah, he wasn't from Hope.
Connection.
He wasn't the boy from Hope.
Yeah. Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. He was from Hot Springs. Yeah, so.
Right, that's another connection to the mafia, is the Clinton, Arkansas connection.
Mm-hmm. Of course, Arkansas factors in later in the cocaine, you know, days
right.
of the 80s.
Mean Arkansas.
Mean
exactly.
Arkansas, yeah. And so does New Orleans, because that's where, what's his name, the pilot. You know, that
oh, Barry Seal. Barry Seal, yeah.
You know, of course, and then Barry Seal's National Guard unit, I think also, Lee Harvey also was a part of, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, wow. Now, had you heard of that connection with Carlos Marcello between Oswald and Jack Ruby? I'd never heard this.
Oh, yeah, because Oswald's uncle was involved in a New Orleans mob.
Yeah, and yep. Oswald has long family ties to Marcello, and I think he lives for a year with Marcello's bookie. and then Jack Ruby has a strip club that he I guess co-runs or co-owns or something with Marcello.
Yes.
So Ruby's strip club in Dallas is directly connected to Marcello, and the Warren Commission decided this was no real substantial connection.
No connection. I think that's also the bar where Secret Service agents got drunk the night before Kennedy's assassination or something.
So, oh wow.
Of course, Jack
but
Ruby.
But there's nothing substantial there. Yeah, all that. But now in let's see, what was it? One of these things I looked at. I think it's the Rob book. He was arguing that supposedly Hoover had withheld all these hours of tapes that he had, and that a lot of these tapes would have. That's the reason they had that reopened investigation in 1979, was that a lot of these tapes came to light.
Mm-hmm.
Had you heard this or you were?
Yeah, well, I heard, remember that from 1976 to 1979, they had the House Subcommittee investigation on the assassinations.
Interesting. And that was because, right?
Yeah.
Because these tapes had been withheld.
Evidence had emerged, and all the research
had come
to a head. And of course, there was a limited hangup. But the final conclusion of the committee was that JFK was indeed a victim of a conspiracy, meaning that it wasn't a lone nut.
Right.
That's, so the final word in the U.S., but they said they didn't find any need for a reinvestigation. I was like, what?
Wow. And you had doublespeak.
Yeah.
Doublespeak.
And all of a sudden you had a slew of murders occur. You had Sam Giancana and Johnny Roselli murdered.
Roselli dead. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And it's kind of, which is interesting, because you see these people there think they're at the pinnacle and they're powerful, but when it comes, they're expendable, because Sam Giancana was, you know.
Well, yeah, he was one of the top mobsters, yeah. Right? But not very difficult, I'm guessing, for probably who at CIA level people to have somebody take him out.
Yeah, and they're just where he's supposed to testify. Johnny Roselli was found; parts of him, at least, were found in a canister floating in Miami Bay. And
yeah.
But these guys were kind of, they were running the Cuban thing. And this ties into Watergate, because Watergate, that's what Nixon used to call the whole Bay of Pigs thing. And by that, he meant the Kennedy assassination. And some people think the trouble he got into was trying to get the files on the Bay of Pigs assassination. CIA wouldn't turn them over. So a coup was orchestrated.
I see.
With Watergate. And yeah, if you ever read
you know who I bet knows a lot. I bet Roger Stone would know about that.
Yeah,
I mean, and that's what Richard was recommending, his book, wasn't he? To me, yeah. I forget the name of the Stone book, but he was arguing that Roger Stone, I think it's the JFK book, like lays out a pretty convincing scenario.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean,
I don't know a whole lot about the whole JFK assassination, other than these kind of like. The second, I have the Mark Lane book. I have Jim Mars's book. I have the American Free Press guy's book, but it's not something I know a whole lot about.
But the again, just you have all these. You know, Oswald was actually being squired by a guy, a white Russian emigre who was a friend, who was friends with George Bush, and for a while they were Oswald and his wife were helped by the Lanes. What was the name? The daughter of one of Alan Dulles' mistresses.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, this connection.
That's almost as comedic as two different women that JFK, Sam Giancana.
Yeah.
And somebody, they're all sleeping with her. And RFK. Right? There's a Judith Exner and Marilyn Monroe.
Mm-hmm.
Judith Campbell Exner, Marilyn Monroe, all sleeping with Sinatra, Giancana, and JFK.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things also you get you talk about, you know, Las Vegas, and Las Vegas has been called sort of the Rosetta Stone. If you understand how Las Vegas came to being, you understand sort of the deep politics of mid 20th century America.
Yes, I agree. That's why a casino is more impressive and interesting to me as a movie, mob movie nowadays, than, you know, Goodfellas or something like that. I mean, obviously The Godfather is really relevant, and Part Two has a, you know, significant section that deals with Las Vegas, but I really like Casino, you know, upon reviewing a lot of these mob movies, better than I used to.
Yeah,
better than Goodfellas.
There is, I think, De Niro's character is Al Rosenthal, who's a real bookie.
Yeah,
I think was he out of Kansas City or Chicago? I forget which one. He was part of the Chicago office, but I think Kansas City was an extension of Chicago, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
So that's one thing interesting about the mob is the New York mob was very powerful on the East Coast. Chicago mob expanded into the Midwest and into California.
And the South.
In the South, yeah. And so it was...
I live in a town that was famously formerly known as being the direct pipeline from Chicago to the South,
mm-hmm.
for the mafia. So yeah,
and of course Las Vegas. This again, it's almost
I'm
like
I'm not talking about Nashville, by the way. There's a small town that has that title famously.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, you have like museums and stuff like that, right?
No, I'm saying that there's it's an old phrase about this town that I forget the exact way it goes. Like one of those cliche phrases, like, you know, oh, this is, you know, the Chicago of the South or something like that.
Okay, sure.
Is the phrase for this hometown because it was supposedly a famous pipeline. Now, this may just go back to like Prohibition days that maybe this town was a hub for like the bootleggers and Al Capone's operations or something like that.
Mm-hmm. But with Las Vegas, you understand this confluence between the state, organized crime, banking. Mariner Eccles, who was the...
Oh, Little Chicago.
That's Little Chicago.
My hometown is called Little Chicago. Yes.
He's good, like a deep dish pizza and
Well, it's not that we don't even have like any like a lot of Italians or anything. It's just that
you need to go
I
down
think
there.
This
Yeah.
was a it was a connection point between Chicago and the South.
But with Las Vegas, you get this again. You have a good book on that. It's The Money and the Power by Sally Denton and Roger
Yes,
Morris.
I have that book. Yes.
Yeah, that was very interesting. But you get this, you know, as it's called, I think in the one of the reviewers of the book called it, they provide a unified theory of corruption, a unified field theory of corruption, political, economic, and criminal. And sort of the, you get that in, you see that in Casino because you see that, you know, the mob, the political corruption. You have you know, the pension funds being raided with the Teamsters and you.
Yes, taking that and putting investing it into casinos. I've always wondered about that. Like, was it just did they outright just steal it, or did they even do like a, well, you know, we're going to invest your pensions in the casinos, or did they just totally steal it?
I've never when they talk about raiding the pension funds. Were the pension funds funded? I mean, did the Teamsters get their pensions because they made a lot of money, and so I don't know if they could raid it and take the heat. So it would make sense just to return the money, and so at least people got their pensions. But I think what it wasn't voted on; it was just taken.
Oh, I see.
You know, and you know, like this is part of Jimmy Hoffa's role in getting that
Okay.
done, and the
Did you see
corrupt.
Irishman?
Yes, I did.
Because he implies, you know, that whenever Hoffa was between, I guess, RFK and the mob, that's what led to Jimmy Hoffa's demise.
Yeah,
I
and
don't know. I don't know how accurate the portrayal is, but you know, that's what Scorsese was implying, that it relates to the JFK assassination. That right.
that's right, because
That
they
the mob had to take care of him.
so. But you, really, it was something it's good because most, you know, with Vegas now, people associate with entertainment, you know, and they don't think about what went into creating that place, you know, all the
Yeah, well,
corruption.
at the end of Casino, he says, you know, when they got busted and in trouble and everything broken up, and you know, the De Niro character gives the monologue that, oh, I had to move back. I moved back to San Diego, and now the big corporations came in and took over. He's like, but we were what made it Vegas.
What suggests is that organized crime, the way that, you know, in the 20th century, it had its time and place, but with the consolidation of the modern world, you know, with New World Order stuff, is it was no longer tolerated. It served its function and then was bought out or was crushed. You know, the big corporations, they're the real mafia, right? I mean. Compared to, you know, Sam Giancana and Johnny Roselli, you know,
Right.
because they were expendable.
Yes, exactly.
You know,
Yeah. Well, it seems that in many of these cases that the CIA would call upon mobsters to be their hitmen or
yes.
contract killers, you know.
Yeah. And of course, you got that with Operation Mongoose, with that operation where they would hire, you know, so-called mechanics and hitmen to do that dirty work to create also plausible deniability. And this is when you get
Yeah, exactly.
when you talk about something like Murder Incorporated, you know, a stable of hundreds, maybe thousands of hitmen. Well, that's not any different than like what an intelligence agency has or a military
Yeah, exactly.
has.
Right. Exactly.
I mean. Take out a recalcitrant, you know, government, you know, leader somewhere, you know, that isn't going by the script.
Yeah, someone recommended, it just came in the mail too. I haven't read it yet, but I was recommended the Thomas Meyer book called Mafia Spies, which is supposedly the whole story of Mafia, JFK, Castro, and the CIA. But I imagine it's probably just talking about all the stuff that we've kind of covered. But
Well, you get it. Like I said, here's how the conflict is that with something with Las Vegas, the Eccles brothers, George Stoddard Eccles was the heir of a large Mormon fortune in Salt Lake City, and of course the Mormon banks funded a lot of. They would hire Catholic frontmen because Mormons are against gambling. But at the very time he's doing this, his brother Mariner Eccles was chairman of the Federal Reserve System. So
Wow.
the brother of the chairman of the Federal Reserve is working with mobsters to create Las Vegas. to launder drug money, largely, because that's largely why it was created. Yeah, they could make they could sucker people out of money, but this meantime, the one thing that's very important is these casinos are laundromats for money,
right?
You know, for the drug for the exploding drug trade in the post-war America.
And I did I did play roulette one time. Finally, I've never played it.
It was like, was
and
it?
I can confirm that you will probably lose money.
But you, did you say it was like virtual roulette? They don't have a.
Yeah, it was like so when we were going back through Hot Springs, coming back from Austin a couple months ago, and they had built this big huge race horse racing place with a casino, and we drove past it. I said, hey, let's go in there. I've never actually done any gambling. I want to see what it's like to spin the roulette wheel. And you get in there and it's not even a real roulette wheel. It's like a big screen. It's like a computer screen roulette wheel. And I was like, it was like going to a video game arcade for adults.
Well, how is that genuine? I mean,
well, they have a wheel in the middle. That's a wheel. You bet with all of these screens that are touch screens. So it's like iPad touch screens, and then the wheel rolls. It just seems silly. It was just like, this is not. I think we made, we spent $100. We were down 100, and then we were up 100, and then we were down 100 or something like that. So I don't think, I was like, yeah, this is, I can confirm that gambling is a ripoff. you're not going to win. Although we were up for, I think, $50 at one point, maybe $100, but.
But did you ever read that the American Pravda series by Ron Unz about California and the mob?
No, I've not read that.
I'll send you the link. It's an interesting article. It talks about how California. Okay. Most people don't think California is being as corrupt as Chicago, New York, but he was surprised to find that it is. And the Chicago mob had successfully transplanted out to California. This is particularly the Jews.
Like, is that through Bugsy and the? In California,
Hollywood. Yeah, this is the super mob covers this. Russ Russo's book, Sidney Korshak, and now figures like the Brown family and also Reagan with Lou Wasserman. These were the kingmakers, and the whole political establishment in California was installed by these mobsters, Lou Wasserman and Paul Ziffrin and Henry Hazelin, who was this corrupt judge who was appointed by Harry Truman. But what happened was in World War II, when they took all the property, the Germans, particularly the Japanese. After the war, this cabal just gave the property at a discount to all their friends. This is like the Crown family and the Pritzker families. So again, these very wealthy families who are now oligarchic banking families had made their vast fortune in that time period in California. This is a time when California was like it doubled in population between 1940 and 1960.
Interesting. Now beyond Bugsy, I didn't know this about. California. No.
Yeah. And Paul Ziffrin, these are very important. Of course, above them is also like the Gettys and Standard Oil, you know, the Getty oil interest out
there. Yeah. I just watched that Getty movie, that newer one.
All the Money in the World or something?
He seems to be a pretty nefarious character, but I don't know a lot about him. I'd heard that that there was even a potential satanic.
Oh, really?
That Getty may have been a Satanist, but I don't know if I may have just heard that somewhere. I don't know if it's true.
Yeah, he just probably was, but despite default.
Yeah, right.
They become the Satanists.
The context was saying that he was literally. Yeah. I know that comes up in the case of the Duke family and a lot of these elite families, but somebody has said that about Getty.
But the whole power structure in California, a lot of its origins is, again, organized crime. And
interesting.
The political figures like the Brown family and the Reagans, they were installed by these people.
Yeah, that makes sense. Obviously, Brown is a corrupt criminal, for sure.
This is Music Corporation of America. It's Jules Stein, who was this I think it was an eye doctor, optometrist, or and he got into music, and of course he used his mobster methods, extortion, to take to control bands and extort hot hotels and all that. They moved out to California and became this huge media empire, which is important because the media has played a big part in.
Well, that's going to say exactly right. I mean, Las Vegas is just a short trip from Los Angeles, mm-hmm. so The record companies are another angle to where you would have a lot of mob influence too. In Los Angeles, for sure.
Yeah. And of course, and they, through music and particularly through movies, they'll control people's perceptions, not only of, you know, reality in general, unfortunately, but also of what organized crime is. You know, we only think it's an
Italian. Well, this is an organized. Yeah, there's an organ. That's this is, for example, the Mansons, right? There's an organized crime connection there through the. Hitman hanging out in the circles of Manson that has Roy Radin killed.
Yeah, that was weird because Roy Radin. Roy Radin was the music movie promoter who got killed because of the Cotton Club thing.
Right.
He had apparently stolen money from a cocaine dealer, I think, some crazy lady, if I recall. I read about this years ago, but didn't he also run these? Like these weird sex parties out in Long Island, which ties back to me with some of the snuff films, which takes us back to Berkowitz and the Son of Sam.
Yeah, right. That's the speculation, is that in most of these cases of these killers, there's multiple things going on, namely the pattern of the filming, because there's a market for that kind of film. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And so, but again, if you're thinking about how these connections, just look up the names like Paul Helliwell, and he stabbed us all these banks, which then laundered money, like the Castle Grand Bank, and with Meyer Lansky and Resorts International, Mary Carter Payton Company. Of course, Resorts International eventually Donald Trump buys. So in the casino industry.
Well, it seems like there was, by the way, I didn't mean to change subject, but I'm just thinking, I think Berkowitz himself, if I recall, says, in the Son of Sam killings, there was a recording of each one because there was a market for that. I'm pretty sure he says that.
Yeah.
Or there's a claim that Berkowitz says that.
And the idea is that a lot of these murders, they would occur with their streetlight.
Yeah.
Thought was odd. Yeah.
So either a recording or a photograph, and that's suggested with BTK too, because he photographed all his things, whether it was just for his own proclivities or he was selling it to people, is not sure. But if Dave's right, then there's elements to the BTK which suggest other people.
And that's the detective, the Gold Chain detective Rothstein, who was investigating. He was brought in on investigation. He was investigating child human trafficking in New York City at the time, and he uncovered that connection. And he was he said that there were wealthy people who paid a lot of money for those films.
He talking about, Berkowitz or BTK?
Oh, Berkowitz. This would have been the again, Berkowitz is blamed for, but Berkowitz said, I think in jail, that he was only one of the gunmen. And whereas
yeah, he claims that. And by the way, have you heard the Clown Candyman podcast yet?
No.
Oh wow, you're gonna love this. You get ready to get blown away, because people have now uncovered definitive connection between Gacy, the famous pedophile John David Norman, and the Candyman killer in Texas, Dean Corll. So now there's a direct connection between two serial killers and one of the most notorious pedophiles in the history of the U.S., John David Norman, the Episcopal priest turned psycho pedophile, crazy person, who was literally pimping out boys and running the boy magazine network for all of America. And the figure of Paskey, P-A-S-K-E, is working directly as the right-hand man of Norman for many years, and he's working directly under Gacy, burying bodies.
Well, that would explain why Gacy appeared to have some sort of protection for a while?
Yes. In other words, new information has come to light recently, not just with conspiracy people, but actually you can actually find the local news reports that are now talking about this with Gacy, that there is definite connections and multiple accomplices now. Yes. Now, to what degree I don't know if that means everything Gacy says is correct.
Yeah.
Obviously, we can't believe all this, but it does confirm that there were other. We know Paskey is an accomplice. And if you listen to the podcast, they don't just connect it to Dean Corll, because what Dean Corll was doing was filming the stuff. And so he was torturing and pimping out the boys, filming it, killing them. And then the recordings and this network goes to Norman, who sells this stuff, the John David Norman character. They're connected to a famous Boy Scout troop group that was busted, I think in Tennessee, Troop 127 or 37, something like that. And the Paskey character is working for both Norman and John Wayne Gacy. So there's a wild level of connection. And the Norman situation, what was going on with him was that they had created him and some rich people had created this Epstein operation, pre-Epstein, in Michigan. It's called the North Fox Island case. And
I have heard of that. Yes.
This is it. Yeah. So this connects actually Gacy to Norman to Dean Corll.
It's very similar to like the Lincoln or sorry, the Larry King thing in Nebraska.
It is exactly. It's like, and by the way, that just reminds me that in the case of John David Norman, the original case, I don't know if it's transcripts or the reports, were that he had 3x5 note cards of some 2,000 or 3,000 customers for his materials, snuff films and all that, that included very high ranking, very important people.
And which, yeah.
Wouldn't you know it, the they have disappeared.
Well, the same, that chief investigator of the Franklin scandal, his plane disintegrated with his son and coming back from the All-Star game in 1989. He said he had the photographs from the photographer of people compromised, and then he disappeared, and his folder or his briefcase disappeared along with that. A farmer said just what happened, just disappeared. A car rolled up, you know, took it away, and that was it.
Yeah, I highly recommend, if the audience is interested, definitely listen to all 7 episodes of the Clown and Candyman podcast. It's done by a woman who's a true crime reporter for the ID network, that whatever that is, that investigative discovery network or something like that. But it's a really well done thing, and they're not particularly intentionally uncovering conspiracies. They seem to have happened to come upon this, and it actually kind of vindicates, you know, a lot of what's in Dave's book.
And it's
new information.
Because with Dave, of course, opens up with, in that book, the Mark Dutroux, if I recall.
Right.
Which
is definitely a case where we know there's accomplices and it's being done for high-level people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's like NATO. That's at Brussels.
Yes.
The power structure.
Oh, by the way, I did not know that there is a satanic connection to Dutroux. Now, I'm not surprised, but I actually found, I dug up an old, let's see, maybe, which, it's either Guardian or one of those mainstream British papers. Here it is. It is the Irish Times. And there was a call, an order, report. There was an order to Dutroux. In other words, he took it like a, you know, because he was procuring.
Mm-hmm.
And a satanic priest placed an order for women to Dutroux. This came out in mainstream news in 1996. It's in the Irish Times. It's called Police Raid the Center of Satanic Sect, December 4th, 1996. For the Irish Times, Jeremy Lovell. Police investigating the Belgian gang accused of child sex abuse murder raided the headquarters of a satanic sect, RTBF television reports. 150 police and special investigators raided the head of the Institute of Abraxas in Fourche-la-Marche. I don't know what that, I can't, I don't know.
My, yeah, French.
Belgian French.
Belgian French.
French. It says the television show. The television showed police taking away video cassettes. It also says that they took black magic ritual paraphernalia and human skulls. And this person, the letter had been written to Dutroux signed by Anubis, and it says that they're basically placing an order for two girls to Dutroux, something like that. Anyway, you can find the article, you'll see what I'm saying. But not just that, but also the other case of the monster of Florence. That guy also was connected to a satanic sect, according to the Guardian in, I don't see the date, but it's called Italian Mass Killer Servant of Satanic Sect, the Guardian reports. If you just looked that up. In other words, this is an element that's suppressed that keeps popping up in these cases.
That's also very similar, if I recall, the details of the Finders case.
Correct. Yes. I didn't even know that had I'd forgotten, if I did know, that it has an occult element to it, that they had like a, that they organized it like a cult, what they were teaching the kids.
Yeah.
Did you remember that? Didn't that come out in the declassified FOIA thing?
Yeah, what happened, I think they're based at a Culpeper, Virginia, and the founder of it is a former Army, I think a sergeant or something, and they were like case and follow people around the town, and they found like files of families, like they were like targeting families or families that might have children that people might be interested in, and of course that case broke because of kids discovered in a van in Florida, and they traced it up to they were claimed to be taken to Mexico, I guess by way of Florida, I don't know, which was just odd, but the kids were found like dirty in their underwear. Some of the smaller kids didn't know how to use toilets or something, so they traced up to a warehouse in the DC area, and where they found telex machines, satanic paraphernalia, video cassettes, recording equipment, and the investigation, I think, was shut down at the order of the CIA.
Yes.
But again, what you see here with Epstein, I would say the Franklin scandal, and with this, the final is that this is probably a lot to do with compromise and getting control files on judges, officials, and it's a brownstone operation. It's how you suborn and control the government, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that's the intelligence angle.
Yeah, it reminds me too of this. I'd forgotten that Dave mentioned in his book, Dr. Thomas Nehru, the Navy's clinical high level psychologist guy who had presented his program at NATO on the Navy profiling psychopathic convicted murderers from military prisons. And so the Sunday Times of, I guess, London, I'm not sure, but they went and questioned him about this. And he said, yes, we are programming the psychopathic murderers and killers, but we're not making assassins out of them. I don't believe that, but he admits that it is a real program, but he says, he swears that it's not so in other words, here we have yet another admission, right? Similar to Phoenix program type stuff, which is Navy admits that it is. What I'm looking at is the New York Times article on it.
Yeah.
So there's a 1975 New York Times article that I found on that, but so that was a real program, but they don't say, well, you know, just trust us. We're not creating killers. We're just profiling them and mind controlling them. But I'm sure they're just healing them, right? It's all for...
Well, I mean, this is something that did...
It's all
did,
for medicinal purposes.
I mean, the Phoenix program was officially a counterinsurgency, pacification program in Vietnam. And what it did was it targeted what they call this... this is their terminology. Was it the civilian infrastructure? And what that meant was, because in Vietnam, because there was no clear battle lines, there was essentially a civil war that was kind of stoked by the United States and right after the Second World War to get the French out and take over the heroin trade.
I think people overlook the ONI side of this,
yeah,
because this seems to pop up a lot. Especially, do you remember that guy, the Navy Yard shooter?
Yes, yeah,
maybe
about 5 years
ago. He claimed that he had been mind controlled.
Mm-hmm.
Which now I don't know if that's true or not, but it does fit this pattern of this this program.
Yeah, yeah. But you did have a program in a foreign country that the people were trained to go in and terrorize people.
Yes,
it came out that they were carrot massacres, tried to blame it on the Viet Cong, and a lot of gory scenes. Dave McGowan gets into this in his book. The book's very disturbing. Right. Yeah, I had a niece one time saw it. Said, "Can I read this?" And I said, "I don't know if you want to."
Yeah,
but go ahead.
That reminds me. Right, so, I got back into Dahmer too. Mm-hmm. Had you seen the claim? It looks like a embassy cable. I don't know what the document is. I just found it kind of randomly on the internet, but it looks like a cable that says that Dahmer is under suspicion for the murders around the base in Germany where he was stationed.
And
have you heard of this?
No, that's the first I heard of it. I know he was in the same military hospital as some other.
Yes. Heidnik.
Heidnik. Yeah. So, was it Wiesbaden or something?
Yes. And so what this says is that they squashed the investigation because Dahmer is directly connected to a high level military person.
Well, that's interesting because the story of Dahmer is, when he was in high school in the late 70s, he was able to get access to the vice president's office.
Correct.
I mean, that's not disputed. So exactly. I don't know what to make of that. It's just like, what?
Take a look at this. Here is the document. I can't verify if this is true or not, but it says Olympia, Washington, contacted the German consulate, Union Square, blah, 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 told the consulate that he was in the same U.S. Army unit as Dahmer and served with him in Baumholder, Germany in 1978. He allegedly showed the consulate the article published by the Seattle Post, which stated that Dahmer was guilty of several murders near something, Germany. Blank claimed that he has evidence that would link Dahmer to 5 murders there in Germany. Blank stated that he never finished any info about this furnished because authorities claimed that a high-ranking U.S. Army officer would be connected to the homicides. So it seems to have been squashed. And I watched actually a bunch of news clips. I found a bunch of archive clips where even the mainstream news was local news was reporting that Germany had fingered Dahmer as the suspect for these brutal, you know, murders around the bases in Germany. Now, guess what? I went and did the, it's not the exact same, it's roughly the same time frame, but is it really coincidental that 2 serial killers spent time in Germany in military hospital installations?
Well,
that to me is very, now, and by the way, they're 30 minutes apart. I went and looked up the distance. Where Heidnik was stationed. Now, I'm not saying it's at the same time, but I'm saying the location is suspect because it's only 30 minutes apart from where Dahmer was stationed.
Well, is this like a factory where they are producing these sorts?
Exactly, know? Right. And by the way, wouldn't it be, if you were going to do this stuff, might be easier to do it not on U.S. soil.
Oh, of course. It's just like the Phoenix program in Vietnam.
Yeah, or like Abu Ghraib, right?
Abu Ghraib, yeah. People, well, look at that. I mean, and if they're willing to do that for a psychological operation against the population, what do they think they're willing to do to the domestic population to maintain political control?
By the way, had you seen the security camera in Dahmer's apartment?
No.
Yes, there is a camera in the corner set up to film what he did.
And no one's ever seen that?
No, it's in the released photos of his apartment.
Mm-hmm. Of course, he was murdered in prison, so he was gotten rid of.
Exactly. But the point is that it speaks to the fact that, again, you would have the pattern of filming what he's doing.
Yeah. Which is interesting. Yeah. What purpose is that?
Now, it, to my knowledge, is not disputed that there's a security camera in his apartment face down in the little, because it's like a, crappy 1-bedroom or 2-bedroom apartment. It's not very big. But nobody's ever explained why it's there, and I've never seen it.
Or how he's able to do what he's doing without getting caught. I mean, killing one person is difficult. Killing two people is even more difficult. But to be able well,
there's
to do
even
that,
the story that the police, at least on one occasion, sending people back to his apartment.
Yeah, the boy, the naked boy,
exactly,
that they sent back, and the stench of death didn't catch their attention or didn't spark any curiosity. Again, same thing with the Dutroux when the police inspector was there with the locksmith and heard girls crying or behind the walls. And
that reminds me, now with Heidnik, we know that he was in the MKUltra program. So if Heidnik is stationed 30 minutes from the other military installation where Dahmer is, it's entirely plausible that Dahmer would be part of that MKUltra program too.
Mm-hmm. And of course, that given with the admission of that Nehru, the Navy officer, who then goes missing, right? He just after he makes that admission, he can't.
Did you? Yeah, right. I forgot that. Did you? Had you seen the claims of Berkowitz about LSD too?
Yeah, I've heard familiar with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when he was in the military.
Yeah, and I think he served in Korea. In the early 70s or late 60s. But that's another connection. Well, of course, the one common theme is military, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I listed all the serial killers that have.
Yeah.
And it's about a couple dozen that have a time in the military.
Was it Arthur Shawcross who said he wanted to join the military because he wanted to be able to kill people or something?
Yes, I think he's one of the most likely Phoenix program people. Now, Wayne Williams, the black serial killer, he openly claims to be a CIA assassin, or he implies it.
That would be the Atlanta child murders?
I think that's him.
Yeah, because he was the he would go out and I think he was like a DJ or something, get talent, attract kids that way. But that's another odd pinning it all on him, where he just simply couldn't be where he was all the places where the bodies showed up. Where I think he was caught because there was like a carpet fibers in the trunk of his car, and he was seen leaving a bridge where a body was dumped. Something that's how he was implicated, I think.
Let's see. Here's, by the way, Dave, I noticed wasn't the first. There's a article from 2000 by a Canadian journalist, and the article is called, it's by a guy named Doug Saunders, 2002, Military Training Links Serial Killers. So Dave wasn't the first guy to notice this. There were other journalists who had started to notice this interesting, which makes sense. I mean, the military trains killers, right? But
yeah.
So let's see. So there's BTK, Dahmer, Berkowitz, Richard Williams, John Muhammad, Gary Ridgway, Ray Norris, Charles Whitman, Leonard Lake, Arthur Shawcross, Charles Ng, Anthony Sowell, Dean Corll, Dennis Nilsen, Gary Heidnik, Robert Lee Yates, Richard Allen Davis, Timothy McVeigh, Randy Kraft. So those are the ones that we know have had a military stint.
Yeah, John Allen Muhammad, the Beltway shooters. Chris, I was in the area when that was going on. Dave McGowan did a lot of research on him. He had unexplained income, going on skiing trips. He was unemployed.
Yes.
Private school for the kids. So it's another interesting angle, or at least
Ted too. Ted seems to have very easily gotten out of. I think he doesn't have two prison escapes.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. So he could terrorize a sorority or something.
There's a couple guys too that I've forgotten of. One of them I never heard of. I take that back. Two of them I never heard of. There's a guy who appears to be a either a KGB or a CIA assassin named Andre Chikatilo. Have you heard of him?
No.
So he's a former, he's a mass murderer, former KGB, who claims that they pinned a lot of victims on him. And this included cannibalism, vampirism of 53 victims. And then there's a Ukrainian serial killer, Anatoly Onoprienko, who in the 80s and 90s is another serial killer who appears to have been a kind of contract assassin, too. So what this suggests is that it's not obviously, you know, it's not just confined to the CIA. It probably exists in the other countries. You know, Russia or Onoprienko was a CIA trained assassin.
And so there could be a kind of a form of haystacking where you do a hit in between a bunch of murders, or at least you pin it on them.
The Chikatilo claims that.
Yeah.
The former KGB guy. And then there's the claim, at least, that with Anatoly Onoprienko, the Ukrainian serial killer, that he actually was a CIA contract killer. So whether that's true, I'm not sure. But that's at least theories.
One of the BTK victims was a military guy, some of the special forces or something, his entire family.
I had forgotten that. Yes, you're right.
Yeah. And who was actually had said he feared for his life for some reason.
Oh, guess what? That just reminds me. Guess who one of Eileen Wuornos's victims was?
A
state child abuse investigator. Found that.
Well, that's interesting.
Right. And this is interesting because now she clearly seems to be kind of loopy and crazy, obviously.
Like, yeah.
She's not all there. But she claimed, right, that she worked with other people. She seems to have Hell's Angels connections. And it would appear that perhaps she was being used to kill people. At least in the case of one of her many so-called victims. Obviously, there would be a motive here, right? I mean, and we know the Hell's Angels do have a connection to child trafficking and this kind of stuff,
mm-hmm.
as well as hits. And so if she was connected to the Hell's Angels, in fact, then it would make sense why there would be a hit on a child abuse investigator.
Yeah. That was like that state senator in Georgia who was she was investigating the corruption of the child protective
yes,
services.
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
And then they turn up and there's she's an elderly, not an elderly couple, but, you know, in maybe early 60s, and there's a murder suicide.
Right.
And they claim it's because their house lost value and when the housing bust occurred. But, you know, they had grandchildren, they had family. I mean, it's like everyone's house lost value in 2008. But they're claiming that was why they both committed suicide. But she was investigating the corruption of the child protection, because it's been charged, alleged that itself is being used as a child trafficking system.
Correct.
And she was really investigating. She was using state power to investigate her position to investigate it, you know. Get ordered investigations with the legislature, oversight. There's a lot of problems can be made. But then she commits suicide. No one's picked up the baton.
Hello.
Okay, they lost you. So the idea is that these, like with BTK or with Wuornos, is suggesting that these psychos that the naval officer suggested are recruited and trained can be utilized, instrumentalized, if you will, to carry out these hits every once in a while. And again, it creates plausible deniability. It's the same way that the CIA may use a gang, MS-13 or the Hell's Angels to ship drugs.
Yes. And many of these things disappear and go down the rabbit hole. For example, I dug up the old Seattle AP report at the time of the some of the early Ted Bundy murders. There was it's called Police File Hints at Ties with the Occult. Satanic cannibal murder in Montana. Animals found skinned, missing their vital organs. The disappearances of Northeastern women all play a part in a mysterious Seattle police file called File 1004. Police interest in the occult, witchcraft, and Satanism have been stimulated by the mysterious slayings of several Washington and Oregon women, by the ravings of a murder in Ohio. That plus the Manson story, blah, blah, blah. The disappearance of the women, one of them in the company of a mysterious man, quote, named Ted, was filed in File 1004 with citizens suspicious of occult connections. Now, what's interesting is that this File 1004 has disappeared. No one knows what happened to this. No one seems to have much of an explanation for. I think one of the women or two of the women in the Bundy story were exsanguinated, which is odd if you're just murdering people. But it could suggest an occult element to Bundy that no one ever talks about, which is interesting.
And this was those reports were, I guess, the 1970s.
Yeah, they're okay. This one is. If you look up Seattle, AP, police file hints at ties with the occult, you'll find this. It's on newspapers.com.
Well, there's a direct connection between, the Pentagon and the occult, because you have figures like Colonel, Aquino.
Yes, exactly.
I mean,
right. So the idea that this is like outlandish is right is just simply inaccurate, given the many, many cases of this.
And did we mention off call where Ted Bundy was linked to some operation targeting the Congressman McDermott when he was a professor?
Right. So when Ted was involved, by the way, there's other things that Bundy seems to have been doing that don't make sense. Like, he was apparently allowed to. This is in the police reports, right? So actually, a lot of this has been declassified at the FBI. You can read all these reports on Dahmer and Bundy. It's a lot of pages. I haven't gone through all of them. But there is a report that when they were questioning Ted about his college time and the different college people that knew him, I think one woman is called Anna Lundberg, who is kind of his department director, because he was studying psychology and aberrant psychology. Surprise, surprise, serial killer studying aberrant psychology. He was allowed to, they let him diagnose people. And so people have raised this question. Now, wait a minute, why is Ted Bundy allowed to, go and, do these research projects where he can psychologically diagnose deviant behavior? This doesn't seem to make sense if he's an undergrad college student, right? Let's see. One of the people in this department is Representative Jim McDermott, or the future Representative Jim McDermott. And at the same time as all this is going on, right, who apparently Ted sneaks into and steals some files. This is one of the early curious events in Bundy's life, that he broke into a professor's office to steal files. I don't think anybody exactly knows what he was doing or what he was up to, but it's odd because that guy becomes a very prominent senator in terms of intelligence committee and this kind of stuff, and going in other doing the I forget the name of the operation, but it's something like open borders. So it's USAID Peace Corps type stuff. So he's involved in a lot of these NGO foreign operations.
Well, a lot of these,
and he himself was a Vietnam military psychiatry guy.
Which again, which raises all types of questions or potential.
And Bundy is living with, at this time, a character, I think for a year, named Mueller, who is a State Department worker who is stationed in Antarctica for a year, or maybe not. He lives with Bundy for a year, but he has to leave and be in Antarctica under Operation Deep Freeze. And then when he's questioned, he says, well, yeah, I might live. I didn't really know him, though, right? So it's like, there's people renting a house. And so, yeah, I live with Ted, but I didn't really know him. But people don't know that Ted was a GOP operative. They would send Ted into rival campaigns to spy and get information.
So his intelligence asset.
Well, at least a political operative.
A political operative, but that's a form of intelligence.
Given these other things, it looks like there may have been a lot more going on. Maybe he was being groomed. He was being groomed to be perhaps even in the CIA.
Yeah, in one capacity or another.
Yeah, right. Maybe as a killer,
But you mentioned McDermott's connection. Was it McDermott's connection to USAID or NGO? Or
yeah, that's direct. If you look at that article that I sent you, that link to the that makes that all very clear. He was at least functioning as some kind of NGO type.
Well, USAID is I think a front for CIA or intelligence. Same
yes,
with,
exactly.
National Endowment for Democracy and. These various NGOs that have sprouted up over the years. A good example of that would be like World Vision, which was a refugee, supposedly a refugee operation, but it was pretty much an intelligence gathering operation where not only would they get information, they also recruit. And of course, I think on the board of World Vision was the father of the would-be assassin of Ronald Reagan.
Oh, wow.
But the and also World Vision, also I think Mark David Chapman, the assassin of the
Yes, that's correct. He John was Lennon. Connected to World Vision. I forgot that. Yes,
World Vision.
Yes, good point. Now this says McDermott credits his interest in the Global Health Fellowship, which is an NGO, due to a trip he took in college. When he was after earning his medical degree, McDermott served in Navy medical corps as a psychiatrist during the Vietnam War. He returned to the U.S. and realized he could do a lot more to improve the lives of individuals as a elected official. He left Washington State to become to join legislature in 1972. And then it says, taking a brief leave from politics in 1987, he went on to do work as a medical officer based in Kinshasa, Congo. Then he served as U.S. Foreign Service medical officer, providing psychiatric services under USAID and Peace Corps. So this, yeah, that's kind of obvious what he's doing. But
I wonder what type of services those are.
Yeah, right. Vaccine services, right. Global health, yeah, right.
Global health initiative,
yeah. It's just very curious that, you know, Ted Bundy's in his program at the university, and Ted sneaks into his office and steals files.
Mm-hmm.
Another interesting, I don't know how much credence we can give to the testimony of Mad Dog McKenna, but he is this kind of crazy killer lunatic. I don't remember how many people he killed, but he claims to have been in the Hand of Death cult, right? The same claim of Henry Lee Lucas that connects Tool to the Matamoros cult and the human trafficking stuff. If that narrative is, now we know Matamoros is true, but if that's connected to Hand of Death is I'm not sure. But there's another killer in Florida who claims to be the Florida arm of the Hand of Death, and his name is Mad Dog McKenna, and he claims to have had lengthy correspondences with Ted about the occultic ritual nature of how you kill people. It's a pretty wild claim. I mean, again, it could be totally made up, just to, you know, because a lot of these serial killers are totally narcissists, so they'll just make up nonsense. But he at least claims that he corresponded with Bundy about the occult nature of killing. So,
or just like just consider the mindset of a Henry Lucas, who has no problem taking credit for hundreds of deaths, as if it's something to boast about. Yeah. I have these many kills. I did that one too, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say, his name is Kenneth Mad Dog McKenna, and I was going to see if I could find what he claims about Ted Bundy. One thing I did do was go through all of the, there's a channel on YouTube called Lowfield and Love, and he, about 10 years ago, kind of started archiving on the pattern of Dave's book, Program to Kill.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's about 250, I don't know, 300 clips. I went through almost all of them. So in the last few weeks, I've been through literally almost all of his clips. And a lot of these videos, he actually archives, not just the interviews with the serial killers, but also the news articles and pieces of data that might disappear or get scrubbed from the internet. So a lot of these I double checked, and they're all pretty much consistent. But I'll tell you another case that's very revealing is Leonard Lake and Charles Ng. And the reason they're really bizarre is not just what they were up to, which is all the typical stuff of, you know, kind of keeping prisoners and filming them and the snuff and all that stuff. They were together living on a hippie compound with the Vegas performer weirdo guy named Oberon Zell Ravenheart, who is a weirdo that literally dresses up like a wizard. And he was famous because he would sew the horn on a goat to create unicorns. And this became a kind of a phenomenon in the late 70s, early 80s. I know this sounds crazy, but this is true. And he was best friends with Leonard Lake. And so when they suspected Leonard Lake as the serial killer, the only picture they could find was this picture of him with one of the unicorns from this weirdo performer guy. And so he got dubbed the Unicorn Killer. This is different than Ira Einhorn. This is a different Unicorn Killer.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason this is all significant is that they're all really close buddies with the people who are the founders of the Society for Creative Anachronism, which leads to the beginning of Renaissance fairs.
Oh,
and that's all. They're all connected to Marion Zimmer Bradley and her husband, who are convicted pedophiles. And Paul Anderson, who is also, I believe, if not a pedo, he's connect. He's like a NAMBLA guy. So the connection here is that, do you see how weird this is getting?
Yes.
All the people that live on this compound, and there's an interview with this Oberon Zell Ravenwood guy I watched where he's like, well, yeah, we lived on a hippie compound with Leonard, but you know, he was just weird. I think all these people are really weird and really creepy.
Well, I wonder what type of culture manipulation are they trying to pull off with that whole scene?
Well, it's kind of like another testament to the fact that the so-called hippie counterculture movement has at its heart something completely dark and satanic.
Yeah.
But yeah, just look up Marion Zimmer Bradley, who was the author of that famous 80s book, Myths of Avalon, which is a feminist retelling of the Arthurian myth.
Mm-hmm.
And here it is. Here's my notes. It says, Oberon Zell, together with his wife Morning Glory, are best friends with Marion Zimmer Bradley. Marion Zimmer Bradley's husband molested many boys. They all helped to found the Society for Creative Anachronism. And guess what? The Society for Creative Anachronism is also connected to other potential murders, namely the murder of the boy in California. They never pinned it for sure on the neo-pagan guy who was in the Society for Creative Anachronism. It's a famous case, and it's like a 14-year-old boy that went missing, and it was a ritual murder. But anyway, the guy that they suspect did it, I'd have to think for a minute to come up with his name, but he was part of the SCA. Anyway, and I'm not saying everybody in the SCA is part of this. It's just the founders are all a bunch of creeps. But
yeah.
So Leonard Lake joins the SCA, and he's interested in getting in these pedo circles. And so this is where the whole unicorn thing, because the unicorn that Oberon Zell Ravenhood came up with, it attracts kids.
Yes. Say.
And so then Paul Anderson, the famous science fiction fantasy author, he founds with Marion Zimmer Bradley and Walter Breen the SCA, and Walter Breen is a huge NAMBLA activist. So that's the connection. That's where it is. Leonard Lake is busy hanging out with all these people and is a practitioner of ritual magic. This is the Greenfield Ranch. The Greenfield Ranch also turns out to be a huge, massive drug operation. And then Leonard Lake goes on to create his compound where he has underground facilities to imprison women and to film stuff. And I watched one of the videos that he made because the Louisville guy had archived all of his, he actually found, I don't know where he got this, but he found some of Leonard Lake's not the home videos of the actual events, that's illegal, but he put a camera on himself explaining what he was going to do. And he is claiming in the video that the apocalypse is coming. And so to survive the apocalypse, he's going to have to build an underground compound to imprison women, right? So he'll have wives when the apocalypse is over, basically.
Oh, so it's like the Dr. Strangelove.
But a darker.
Yeah, darker.
Like a white trash version of something. Because he's living in a trailer out somewhere in California. But
they're also
military trained killers, if I recall.
But they had he had a network of underground cells or rooms built.
Yes, he built underneath his quasi trailer like double wide trailer.
And
in the videos, he's showing you how he's doing it. Like he rents a backhoe and he digs out all of these underground rooms. And got caught because he had, you know, basically women chained up and was filming and selling it and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had a home set up that was a film studio, underground rooms and whatnot. It's one of the more, this one and the Gary Heidnik are a couple of the more gruesome one. And the pig killer, that one is really, really bad. Do you know I'm talking about the guy in Canada?
No.
Picton. Those are really gross. I won't go into those. Research those on your own. But basically, you know, in the case of the Picton pig farm, the accusation or the assumption is that really wealthy people were paying to come to this really nasty backwoods guy's pig farm, and you can kind of pay to do what you want with somebody. So,
and guess the pigs would get rid of the body.
That's part of how they would dispose of stuff. Wow. But it was all being filmed. So basically,
the whole snuff film thing, which supposedly doesn't exist. Yeah.
Yeah. The another one of these killers too that I never heard of is the RAEF Canadian Williams guy.
Oh yeah, the guy who was with the Queen and he.
Yes.
Yeah.
That one blew me away. I'd forgotten that guy. Yeah.
He killed the Canadian Army woman or something. She was in the Canadian. Was she an officer in the Canadian Army that he murdered?
Yeah, and he was filming things and he liked to wear women's clothes.
But he was in the Royal Guard or something. He was like elite.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a VIP pilot, so he flew the elite around. So.
Yeah, it's I mean, but you get getting back to like the whole idea of again having a stable or recruiting these people to do whatever, I guess, hits or just Dave McGowan theorized or at least said that maybe there might be up above and beyond that a sort of cultural program where the whole idea of the serial killer on the American landscape or terrorize atomized society and
correct
it's something that again just fear
Tom, have you seen the Tom O'Neill book? I just started that one. He's got a new book. Chaos is, and it's about Manson and the CIA. So mm-hmm. I think he's dug up new connections too. And Rogan had him on, I think, a few months ago. So the book has gotten popular from him being on Joe Rogan. But it's another book in this train of kind of connecting Manson to bigger events.
Mm-hmm. And the whole narrative of Manson, which was Vincent Bugliosi, I think, kind of created, right? The whole idea the Helter Skelter theory, which was borrowed from this cult, California cult, I think. Manson's supposed eschatology about a race war and these things was borrowed by, was it Krishna Ventna or something? Or?
Yes, and that seems to come out of the Process Church. I think the Process Church took Maury Terry to court, and I think they lost.
That's right, because the connections with that. But it's again the idea that the whole idea of the serial killer itself, how it's sort of been phased out. Remember, it was like
Well, we had the mass shooter kind of step in.
Yeah, yeah.
The new role of that social engineering, and if it sounds outlandish that the whole phenomenon of the serial killer would be a wider scale mind control operation, we'll consider that the same people who will just take somebody like Aquino. If you read Aquino's writings, he actually speaks that way. He speaks of using aesthetic terrorism, as he calls it, or as they call it, the Satanist types, on the masses. And he would make no bones about that.
Well, didn't he write a book, Psy War or something? Or
That's an essay that he wrote with another colonel from Mind War to Psy War, which I highly recommend.
Was it General Valley or something?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he's got another book called Black Magic, where he talks about using, you know, kind of the principles of sorcery as a kind of mass psychological warfare. Sure.
So here we have an avowed Satanist who's
yes.
pretty high up in the military establishment,
yeah,
writing manuals.
He was head of Army Psyops, if I recall.
Yeah. And of course, he's attached. He himself was implicated at the Presidio.
At the Presidio, yes.
Yeah. But then again, are you surprised at a bad Satanist might do something like that? But the fact that they get that someone like with that outlook, worldview, if you will, whatever, would be employed by the military, develop Psywar manuals or strategies that are targeting civilian populations, namely the American population.
Well, if we've got a Satanist running psyops, why would we be surprised that the military would be using satanic serial killers? I mean, it seems pretty logical to me. But.
So you have a guy in the Navy saying that they do recruit and train.
Yes.
I guess psychopaths.
Right.
But then you have someone. You also have an officer, Colonel Aquino, who's developing psychological war strategy for the Pentagon.
Right.
So is it too far of a stretch to? Of course, the whole meme or idea of a serial killer out there kind of contributes to sort of chaos in society. It's strategy of tension. It's you keep everyone on edge.
Well, wasn't that the point of the Phoenix program?
Yes.
Terrorize the collective psyche yeah. of the Viet Cong
and appeal to their local, superstitions and fears.
Right.
Yeah. Remember in the Philippines with the vampires? Is that Lansdale's operation?
Is it the Victor Marchetti book? Yeah.
Yeah, that was Lansdale, right? Who came from advertising, by the way. but he was sheep dipped, by the way. He was so he was an Air Force general, but he was CIA all the way. But I think was he the one that came up with the idea where they were to put down the Philippine rebellion, they would kidnap a member of a guerrilla outfit and exsanguinate them, right? Bleed them, which is interesting.
Yes. Interesting. Well, that's perhaps that could speak to what Ted did. If there was the instances of exsanguination and the women that some of the women that Ted killed.
And you had a recent talk, and I'm reading that chapter on ufology with the Collins brothers. Again, why is this? This is a psychological. They're gonna whether considered a superstition or whatever is why would that be promoted? Why would the ufology? Why would the alien meme be promoted by the government to the point where they're driving people nuts, driving them to suicide? Well, they have all types of theories of why that is.
Speaking of that, and I don't mean to provoke a religious debate, but I would assume you would probably agree with somebody like you, Michael Jones, about Medjugorje.
I actually
read an interesting theory that Medjugorje could have been a psychological warfare operation.
E. Michael Jones tends to believe that. I think he sees it in terms of the Cold War. It's kind of like he says.
Well, I actually found some old essays that even suggest that.
Yeah.
Yes.
And this was the breaking up of Serbia. I'm sorry, Yugoslavia.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
And it's the same way that that the Fatima was instrumentalized by the Western powers for the Cold War. And so this is, sort of a Balkan Fatima. That's what he calls it. but again, take it back to something like serial killers, you're going to appeal to something like a serial killer is going to appeal to the anxieties and fears of the American middle class, because it's going to disrupt their idea of their peaceful life. Their normal life is being disrupted. You can't go out and play.
Right. The serial killer typically, except for a couple instances, is a middle class suburb phenomenon.
Yes.
Right? It's the Dahmer next door. It's the Gary Heidnik down the road. It's the, Ted Bundy, it's the Gacy who's an adjunct for the cops. Right. It's all these middle class people.
And you're not safe anywhere.
Right, right, right.
You're not safe anywhere. And he may or may not even exist. I interviewed an author named Thomas Horn, whose theory is that the Zodiac Killer never really existed. It was just a narrative that was spun by disparate evidence.
Which is very
interesting.
I don't know what to make of that. I remember when you interviewed that guy that went pretty deep into that theory. I did rewatch Zodiac actually the other day, the movie, which I'm not saying that proves or disproves anything. I don't know, but, at least in the case of Lucas, there is definitive proof that in many of the instances, he could not have committed all those murders.
Yeah, yeah.
So we know that he didn't commit all those. And as I mentioned to you, there is one of the episodes of the Lowfield Channel's installments is a TV show from the 90s that has the Texas lawyer Vic Fizell won $53-58 million when the FBI and the Texas Rangers went after him. And so he won his case in regard to their defamation against him when he was trying to defend Lucas, because he definitively showed that it was not possible for Lucas to have done all that.
Yeah, all those killings. But yeah, idea of like just creating the idea of a serial killer. I mean,
like
the Boston Strangler. He was a murderer, but he didn't commit those murders. You know.
Yeah, I went through all of those too. I don't know what to make of that one. I mean,
Henry DeSalvo.
DeSalvo.
And there's it was the case up in Chicago, Speck. That weird story. He supposedly kills 8 women in one night or something. And what? And they all like wait to be murdered. It's like they're waiting in a room. And he's coming back. He's taking them out one by one.
Yeah.
Who does that? I mean, it's my turn. Okay.
Well, there was something about that was with BTK too, right? Like he was able to kill multiple special forces people.
And yeah.
He doesn't look like some kind of like. He just looks like a normal kind of boomer guy. He doesn't.
No. He doesn't look like he, you're right. He's like what?
He would be overpowering all of these people and their dogs. You know.
Yeah. But I mean, we'll spin the idea of a serial killer, or I mean, the idea of psychological warfare is what they use against the public for some sort of political, cultural, social objective, whatever. I mean, look what they've done with public health and viruses. You know,
exactly. That's a form of mass social trauma, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the masks are used in Abu Ghraib.
Yes.
The surgical masks. So there you go. It's mask social trauma.
Yes, but look what they've turned. The fear that. And if you just watch the news reports, the typical mainstream. I haven't, but I was so. Every once I see one on YouTube, is a clip, and just the new how they cover a story. The reporter is always talking as if he sounds like he just stepped off a treadmill. They use disparate video clips to spin a narrative. It's got nothing to do with any reality. And it's like, and just driving nuts watching this. And I'm thinking to myself, are there really people that sit back and watch this and think this is useful information? I mean,
yeah, I was watching, we were watching a satire movie that was like, it was satirizing kind of local news reporting of murders and horror. And it was a, there was a local news reporter who was every time the report would come on of a murder, she would have those kind of like a local community stained by another murder, the stain of blood, right? And it would, and all of the allusions and just the way the local news reporters speak is so absurd.
Yes. Yeah. And it's like back when last year it was, I think it was Labor Day in Wisconsin. It was beautiful weather. And they're reporting people like going to the lake without masks on. And this is actually before mask mandates, by the way. This is, the reporter goes, look at these people, this gentleman is without masks. And he goes, well, neither is your cameraman.
Yes.
And the guy goes, and then he goes back to the studio and the news babe goes, stunning pictures, just people walking around enjoying the sun. It's not stunning pictures, but they're treating like it's complete. You know, it's something completely different. It's like there's no reality to it anymore.
A local community torn apart, like the bodies torn apart by the serial killer.
So it's just one big, they're just screwing with you, and that's what they admit to doing. I mean, you have Satanists writing psychological warfare manuals. You know, and it's not like this is a manual that's on the shelf waiting for a declaration of war or hostilities where they'll target the bat, the enemy. It's just how they govern and how they manage society. How else do you tolerate a democracy? You got to do it this way. You got to manipulate the people, you know, and then when it comes down, you don't even have to count the votes, apparently. So.
I'm gonna have to.
Yeah, I'll let you go. So, listen, Jay, I want to thank you. So, this series you're having, how many do you think you can have? I think you've done two on organized crime so far.
Well, there's several more chapters in the Selwyn Robb book. Okay. I'd like to expand and get into a couple of the other books, like the Vegas book and the Mafia Spies book. We'll see. And then I want to do Murder, Inc. and Charles Ashman's book. But now in this, there's a lot more information, actually, that I dug up on the serial killers. So I've got about 50 pages of written notes that I took on all those 250 or 300 clips from the Lowellfield channel. But that'll probably be a series of at least 3 or 4 installments and maybe more. But be sure, Tim, and I'll send you a link in a minute, but you'll really appreciate the Clown Candyman podcast.
I'll check it out.
It's pretty wild. But so,
so you're not taking the New York Times advice. You are going down the rabbit hole on these things.
I forgot they said that, didn't they?
Yeah, you just go to go to Wikipedia, and that's it. That's all you need to do. Okay, Jay, I'll let you go. That's Jay. Jay Dyer from Jay's Analysis, jaysanalysis.com. You can go there, check out his work. Of course, if you like it, subscribe, because what he's doing does take time. And
well, thank you. Yeah.
It's what he does for a living, and if you enjoy his research, support it.
So. Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Jay.
And keep up the good work, too.
Thank you.
We'll talk soon.
Good night, then. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.